Texas American World, this is Mark Dankos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're going to be joined this morning at 8 o'clock Central Standard Time by Mark Farrell of Cincinnati, Ohio, a nationally known anti-Zionist activist. We're going to be speaking with him about a whole host of issues related to some of his media productions and what he thinks of the current overall political situation in the United States and abroad. That's going to be Mark Farrell at approximately 8 o'clock this morning Central Standard Time. Was talking with Mark Glenn yesterday of Crescent and Cross, and Mark tells me that the No Wars for Israel conference has been rescheduled. That's going to happen in June, and as far as we know, the venue will still be Los Angeles. I will keep listeners of RBN posted on that conference. I'm planning on speaking there along with Mark Glenn and Michael Collins Piper and a few other people, but that's now scheduled to happen in June in Los Angeles. And that assumes, of course, that we're not at war by that time, and at war once again on behalf of Israel. So we'll see, but keep an eye on that conference information, and I will keep you posted on that, both through RBN as well as Breaking All the Rules news. I was talking with one of our fine RBN techs today who was telling me that we're very close to making some real significant progress on getting the archives reloaded and uploaded at our website, which is at republicbroadcasting.org. The reason they're doing this with such painstaking care, I'm told, is that they plan on making this a searchable option for you, the listener, not simply to scroll through the lists of individual hosts and to watch their shows for certain guests and topics, but this will be a searchable situation where you can do a search on the RBN archives once they're completed and find something presumably at the click of a button. So that's in the works, and keep an eye on that, and I'll keep you posted both in terms of my archives as well as other archives at RBN, and that will take place, we trust, in the next few days, the very near-term future. Really enjoyed having Michael Collins Piper on this show yesterday. He spent 2 hours with me. I really appreciate that because of Mike's very, very heavy schedule, both at RBN and also at American Free Press. Always a fine thing to talk to Mike about different things that he sees going on in the world. And lo and behold, the things that both he and I and Mark Glenn and others have been talking about in recent weeks and months and years now seem to be coming to pass. And we'll keep an eye on those stories as they confront us. And certainly in the days ahead, it's well worth your time and mine to keep an eye on all of these things going on internationally, particularly what seems to be a move toward war with Iran and a changing of your life and my life, presumably, for what remains of the history of this cosmos. Speaking of war, Dr. Louis Fisher has something listed at the Congressional Research Service, and he has made a statement in regard to who has ultimate war-making powers in regard to the Constitution of the United States. This is something that Howard Phillips of the Conservative Caucus has sent me. Howard Phillips, in turn, has pulled it off of LouRockwell.com. Dr. Fisher made this statement before the Senate Committee on the Judiciary, January the 30th, 2007. LouRockwell.com reran that statement on the 12th of February this year. And it goes as follows. In recent years, some commentators have argued that Congress cannot, in time of war, interfere with the president's power as commander-in-chief. Others claim that if Congress decides to exercise the power of the purse, it must terminate all funding rather than adopting more selective or focused approaches. When Mark Dankos America returns to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network, we're going to take a further look at what Dr. Fisher has said about the Constitution and about war-making powers, and also take a look at Dr. Robertson Guinness's final piece on neocons and the Jewish connection, and then Mark Farrell will join us at 8 o'clock. Stay tuned.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
Hey America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Anti-Zionist activist Mark Farrell of Cincinnati, Ohio, will join us at approximately 8 a.m. Central Standard Time this morning. Up until that time, we're looking at a few news stories, and I was just starting to read the statement of Dr. Louis Fisher from the Congressional Research Service. They recorded something that he said before the Senate Committee on the Judiciary, January 30th, 2007. LouRockwell.com ran this piece on the 12th of February, and quoting Dr. Fisher, who's talking about the Constitution and who it is that has ultimate war powers as far as the Constitution is concerned. He says that in recent years, some commentators have argued that Congress cannot, in time of war, interfere with the president's power as commander-in-chief. Others claim that if Congress decides to exercise the power of the purse, it must terminate all funding rather than adopting more selective or focused approaches. These commentators read congressional power far too narrowly and misunderstand the purpose of the Constitution and its commitment to representative or Republican government. The framers vested the decisive and ultimate powers of war and spending in the legislative branch. The legislative judgment to take the country to war carries with it a duty throughout the conflict to decide that military force remains in the national interest. As with any other statute, Congress is responsible for monitoring what it has set in motion. In the midst of war, there are no grounds for believing that the president's judgment for continuing the war is superior to the collective judgment of elected representatives. Congress has both the constitutional authority and the responsibility to retain control and recalibrate national policy whenever necessary. The breadth of congressional power is evident simply by looking at the text of the Constitution and comparing Article 1 to Article 2. The powers expressly stated give Congress the predominant role in matters of war. However, this purely textual reading misses what the American framers did, why they did it, and how they broke with the reigning British models of executive power. Their study of history led them to place in Congress the sole power to take the country from a state of peace to a state of war. They left with the president, in his capacity as commander-in-chief, certain defensive powers to, quote, repel sudden attacks, unquote. In 1787, the existing models of government throughout Europe, particularly in England, placed the war power and foreign affairs solely in the hands of the executive. John Locke, in his second treatise, on civil government in 1690, vested the federative power, what we call foreign policy, with the executive. Sir William Blackstone, in his commentaries, defined the king's prerogative broadly to include the right to declare war, send and receive ambassadors, make war or peace, make treaties, issue letters of marque and reprisal, authorizing private citizens to undertake military actions, and raise and regulate fleets and armies. The framers carefully studied this monarchical model and repudiated it in its entirety. Not a single one of Blackstone's prerogatives was granted to the president. They are either assigned entirely to Congress, as in the declaration of war, the issuing letters of marque and reprisal, raising and regulating fleets and armies, or they are shared between the Senate and the president, appointing ambassadors and making treaties. The rejection of the British and monarchical models could not have been more sweeping. In recent years, advocates of presidential authority have argued that the title commander-in-chief empowers the president to initiate military operations against other countries and to continue unless Congress cut off all funds, presumably by mustering a two-thirds majority in each House to overcome an expected presidential veto. Such a scenario means that a president could start and continue a war so long as he had in place at least one-third plus one in a single chamber of Congress. Nothing in the writings of the framers, the debates at Philadelphia, and the ratifying conventions, or the text of the Constitution supports that theory. Article 2 reads, quote, "The President shall be Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States." Here is one constitutional check. Congress, not the President, does the calling. Article 1 gives to Congress the power to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Under Article 1, Congress raises and supports armies and provides and maintains a navy. It makes rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. It provides for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. Just as military officers are subject to the direction and command of the president, so is the president subject to the direction and command of members of Congress because they are the representative of the sovereign people. To allow a president to conduct a war free of legislative constraints or free of constraints unless both houses muster a two-thirds majority to override a veto would violate fundamental principles of Republican government. The basic distinction between offensive and defensive military actions was understood by all three branches for the first 160 years. President Truman's decision to go to war in 1950 against North Korea marked a fundamental change. He went not to Congress for authority, but to the United Nations Security Council. Korea represented the first of several unconstitutional presidential wars. Prior to that time, it was broadly understood by Congress, presidents, and the courts that anything of an offensive nature in military operations was reserved strictly to the nation's representatives. Presidents accepted that principle for all wars, declared or undeclared. When President George Washington took military action against certain Indian tribes, he carefully followed statutory policy and understood that his operations against tribes were to be defensive, not offensive measures. His Secretary of War, Henry Knox, wrote to governors, quote, The Congress, which possessed the powers of declaring war, will assemble on the 5th of next month. Until their judgment shall be known, it seems essential to confine all your operations to defensive measures, unquote. To Knox, Washington had no authority to direct offensive operations against Indian tribes because such measures were reserved, quote, to the decisions of Congress, who solely are invested with the powers of war, unquote. In debating whether to adopt statutory restrictions on the Iraq War, members of Congress want to be assured that legislative limitations do not jeopardize the safety and security of U.S. forces. Understandably, every member wants to respect and honor the performance of dedicated American soldiers. However, the overarching issue for lawmakers is always this: is a military operation in the nation's interest? If not, placing more U.S. soldiers in harm's way is not a proper response. Members of the House and Senate cannot avoid the question or defer to the president. Lawmakers always decide the scope of military operations either by accepting the commitment as it is or by altering its direction and purpose. In a democratic republic, that decision legitimately and constitutionally resides in the Congress. Again, the source on that is Dr. Louis Fisher, Congressional Research Service, from a statement before the Senate Committee on the Judiciary, January 30th, 2007. That, of course, was then reproduced in LouRockwell.com on February 12th. Folks, I think that pretty much says it all in regard to what the issues are here constitutionally. And we need to watch this because ultimately what has happened both in Iraq, and I think Michael Collins Piper would agree with me with what is about to happen in Iran, is a trashing of the American Constitution, and quite clearly something that will provide the last vestiges of death to the American Republic in the days ahead, unless someone steps forward to say that this is simply unacceptable. And as we go down and look at some of the news stories, I'd like for you to take a look at Breaking All the Rules News. If you glance at Breaking All the Rules News, we updated some of their stories last night at BATR.net/BATR News. A series of things there that are well worth your time, particularly as we consider what Dr. Louis Fisher has said about the Constitution of the United States and the fact that the Constitution vests war-making powers in the Congress, the legislative branch of our government, not the executive branch. And yet as we watch things that are going on around the world, it becomes abundantly clear that there are machinations going on that are designed to bring us into a wider war. A number of news agencies yesterday had a piece on the Iran claiming that the Mossad and the Central Intelligence Agency were behind the disappearance of their former minister. Al-Bawaba reports from Amman, Jordan, that Iran suspects that the CIA and the Mossad are involved in the disappearance of Ali Reza Asghari, a retired general in the elite Revolutionary Guards and a former deputy defense minister. As a result, Israeli security has increased at the nation's embassies worldwide. On Monday, a British newspaper reported that there was a possibility that the missing official possessed information on Ron Arad, the Israeli Air Force navigator that has been missing since 1986. Arad's whereabouts have been in question since then, when his plane was shot down over southern Lebanon. Reports claim that pro-Iranian Hezbollah took the Israeli from Amal security chief Mustafa Durrani the following year, and that in 1988 members of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard took Arad and transported him to Iran. Additionally, Asghari may have intimate knowledge of Iran's nuclear development program, according to the British Daily Telegraph report. On Tuesday, the official Islamic Republic news agency reported that Asghari arrived in Turkey on a private visit from Damascus, Syria. This is something, of course, that goes even more deeply into issues of this kind when we examine what Israel Insider has said on this whole thing. Israel Insider has an op-ed piece entitled, "Where Have You Gone, Ali Reza Asghari?" Breaking All the Rules News has posted that piece at Neocon Watch. If you go to BATR's main news page and then go to Neocon Watch, you'll find it. And there we see an op-ed piece in Israel Insider, Israel's daily news magazine, written by Micah D. Halpern. When we come back, I want to take a look at that op-ed piece because it says a great deal about Israeli foreign policy and the role of the Mossad and the CIA and all kinds of things, including expanding the opportunities for America to expand this war in the Middle East in the interest of Israel. Mark Dankos America will return from San Antonio live on RBN. Stay tuned.
Gold, ever climbing, as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall. How long before it hits rock bottom? Between 1800 and 1913, the value of the dollar was more or less constant. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the value of the dollar has depreciated 97%. Due to global inflationary policies and the continued erosion of the U.S. dollar, gold and silver are still in the early stages of the greatest bull market the world has ever seen. Whether you purchase precious metals to stabilize your portfolio or you're looking for strong growth, gold and silver will provide you with both. Don't you owe it to yourself to do business with Republic Trading Group? Call us today and become a part of the raging bull in gold and silver. 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898. Call now. 1-800-691-7898.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We will be joined at approximately 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, or after the first commercial break after that hour, by a gentleman by the name of Mark Farrell of Cincinnati, Ohio, who has an awful lot to say about Zionism and anti-Semitism. He has a number of media productions out on these topics, which we'll discuss when he comes on a little bit after 8 o'clock this morning. In the meantime, we are looking at news stories. And, of course, I had been making reference in the first part of the hour to Dr. Louis Fisher and his statements that are reported upon in the Congressional Research Service that chronicle what he said before the Senate Committee on the Judiciary January 30th, 2007, regarding who it is constitutionally that has the right to make and declare war. Folks, that is not simply a pedantic argument from the past. It's not simply of interest to academics. It's of interest to you and to me as we get ready for an expansion of this American military operation in the Middle East, presumably in the interest of Israel. Stephen Snigosky, Dr. Stephen Snigosky of The Last Ditch, has an article on this currently at his website, and we have placed that article at Breaking All the Rules News under Neocon Watch. I might read a portion of that article a little bit later on in the show, but Dr. Stephen Snigosky of The Last Ditch has a post entitled Not for Oil but for Israel or something to that effect, and that's an absolutely interesting brand of argumentation that he undertakes in regard to underscoring who and what it is primarily that is behind this present situation in the Middle East in which we find ourselves embroiled. And as we get back to Israel Insider today, you can find this story at Breaking All the Rules News under the Neocon Watch Division. This is an op-ed piece from Israel Insider, and BATR links to it. And it's written by a guy named Micah D. Halpern, H-A-L-P-E-R-N. It's entitled, Where Have You Gone, Ali Reza Askari? And it goes on to discuss this kidnapping of this Iranian national security official, apparent kidnapping in Istanbul, Turkey. It's been reported on throughout the Middle East and throughout the world in the last several days, has largely gone unreported in most of the conventional American news media. I wonder why. And yet, if you look at Israel's news media, this story is being discussed. I want you to listen to Micah Halpern's piece today on Israel Insider, where he says, Ali Reza Askari has disappeared, gone, vanished, no sign, no trace. The last time Askari was seen was in Istanbul, disembarking from a plane. Who is Ali Reza Askari? For those who know the languages of the Middle East, it is obvious from his middle name Reza that Ali is Iranian. Those who follow Iranian political history will know that he was a former Iranian deputy defense minister. And for many years, Ali Reza Askari was the highest-ranking Iranian intelligence officer in Lebanon. February 7th is the last time Ali Reza Askari was sighted. Iran has sent a team to Turkey to investigate the situation. Iran has asked Interpol to intercede and help find their man. Iran has asked local Turkish authorities for their eyes, ears, and assistance. To date, there are no leads. Nothing. Just dead ends. The one thing Iran has not done is issue an official statement speaking of the disappearance of one of their top officials and most valued diplomats. Iran has not yet officially recognized the disappearance, the probable kidnapping, of a man who holds in his head the secrets of the nation of Iran. Askari's plane originated in Damascus, Syria, and touched down in Istanbul, Turkey. He was either grabbed from the airport or from his hotel. He was a former Iranian deputy defense minister, and for many years, Ali Reza Askari was the highest-ranking Iranian intelligence officer in Lebanon. Who would do such a thing? According to Micah Halpern today at the Israel Insider, he cites the Mossad. I'll tell you who else, Micah goes on to say. The good old red, white, and blue CIA and a plan coordinated with the Mossad. The CIA has a vast set of resources and a large operation working out of Istanbul. The Mossad has the language skills and the cultural ease and know-how necessary to do the job. Ali Reza Askari has firsthand knowledge that is vital to Israel. Ron Arad, an Israeli navigator, was shot down and taken captive over Lebanon in 1986, precisely during the period when Askari was Iran's man in Lebanon. Arad, now an Israeli icon, is still missing. His fate and whereabouts completely unknown. If the Israelis have Askari, they have access to essential information about Arad, about where he or his body have been for the past 21 years, about why no group has ever cut a deal with Israel for his return. And there is more. If the Israelis have Askari, they have the intelligence they need about Iran's nuclear threat and Iran's real and actual interest and ability to strike at Israel. If they have him, and if they can break him. Ali Reza Askari holds a virtual goldmine of information for the United States. Askari made decisions, implemented decisions, and witnessed operations. Askari was an Iranian player, a big-time player. We'll get back to Micah Halperin's op-ed piece for Israel Insider entitled, Where Have You Gone, Ali Reza Askari? When Mark Dankoff's America returns live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mark Farrell of Cincinnati will join us at a little bit after 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Hi, this is Steve Shank with Fearless Radio and RBN, your only source for solutions to problems of troubled times. Do you realize that 3 years ago, the JMS Food Group warned people that there would come a time when if you didn't grow it yourself, or you already had it stored, you wouldn't dare eat it? Wait a minute. E. coli on our spinach and lettuce? That's our food you're talking about. You know where E. coli comes from? Feces, black water. In short, poop. We have to decide quickly to get all the food we're going to need. It's obvious that contamination can leave us hungry even before food shortages shut us down. For help ordering your food supply and protection from dishonest suppliers, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. On the phone, 800-409-5633.
America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We will be joined at shortly after 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, by Mark Farrell of Cincinnati, talking about issues related to Zionism in Israel and the Middle East. This morning in the first hour, we're looking at some news stories. I again would draw your attention to the remarks made by Dr. Louis Fisher. These are remarks made that have been recorded by the Congressional Research Service. From Dr. Fisher's statement before the Senate Committee on the Judiciary, January 30th, 2007, emphasizing that it is the Congress of the United States that has the constitutional authority to make war and to declare war. That's particularly important, I think, today as those of us on the America First right become increasingly queasy about yet another war that has not involved a congressional declaration of war, that involves references to the United Nations and other international bodies, and that by osmosis seems to be expanding, not simply in terms of Iraq, but now all of this talk about a preemptive war with Iran. And when we examine the character of Mr. Bush's neoconservative advisors, when we look at the role of the Israeli lobby in both of the major political parties in the United States, and the ongoing control of the American news media by the Israeli lobby and by Jewish financial and political interests. We'll be looking at that last point maybe a little bit later on this morning with reference to Dr. Robert Sungenis' latest portion of his piece, Neocons and the Jewish Connection, at Catholic Apologetics International. It becomes abundantly clear what the picture is. It's not a pretty picture, and it seems that slowly but surely, day by day, week by week, we get closer and closer to an entirely new and grave set of circumstances in the Middle East that will affect an even wider spectrum of Americans than what we have seen up to this point. Again, back to Israel Insider, however, and Micah Halperin's op-ed piece on Ali Reza Askari. If you've never heard of Ali Reza Askari, he was a former Iranian deputy defense minister. He was an elite officer in the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. He was at one time Iran's leading man in Lebanon and has a lot of connections to the Iranian intelligence community, dating back at least to his days in Lebanon as a representative of the Iranian government. But lo and behold, Mr. Askari was traveling from Iran to Istanbul recently. Was cited for the last time in Istanbul on the 7th of February. Since that time, no one has heard of him or has seen him. Iran has not yet initiated any official inquiries. as they, I think, are working behind the scenes to try and figure out exactly what has transpired here. But looking at Micah Halperin's op-ed piece today for Israel Insider, Mr. Halperin indicates that all of the evidence points to the Israeli Mossad and the American Central Intelligence Agency as having abducted Mr. Ali Reza Askari. And Halperin continues with his rationale by saying that the Israeli Mossad and the CIA, if they have him, should work on breaking him. Halperin then goes on to say, quote, "The disappearance of Ali Reza Askari is Iran's worst nightmare come to life. He is a living national resource. If Askari is broken, if he talks, the United States and Israel will know the truth about Iran's arsenal and Iran's objectives. The United States and Israel will know the truth about the threats menacing them. They will know fact from fiction. One of the most immediate and intimidating threats facing the United States and Israel and the European world is the threat of sleeper cells. Just recently, the Telegraph of London published a report maintaining that if Iran were to be attacked, Iran would retaliate by hitting United States and European interests throughout the Gulf. The report quoted a former Iranian diplomat as saying that Iran has trained great numbers of operatives who now have their missions and await the message to activate their plans. The same source also said that these sleeper operatives were recruiting other Shiites in their local environments. If it's true, it is scary, very scary. If it is true, Askari is the man who could identify the targets and identify the sleepers. Askari has the information. He knows who is embedded and where, and he knows how deep and organized each cell really is. Ron Arad, the true Iranian nuclear threat, sleeper cells. There's more. Ali Reza Askari can shed light on Iran's pursuit of Al-Qaeda. He has insider information about the true extent and power of Hezbollah. He knows which countries are aiding Hezbollah. He knows how much comes from Syria and how much comes from Iran. And he can unmask Russia, the country that has been playing both sides against the middle, the country that supplies Iran and Syria and sits back and watches while Iran and Syria turn around and hand over their Russian-gotten goods to the Hezbollah. In the recent war between Hezbollah and Israel, the most dangerous weapons came directly from Syria, having been imported from Russia. And Russia is the power building the nuclear power plants, supplying the technology and lending the support Iran needs to develop its own nuclear program. Most important of all, Ali Reza Askari can answer the big question. Is Iran as brave, tough, organized, and advanced as we would believe? Or is Iran a modern-day former Soviet Union? Lots of bark and almost no bite, a big bluff, an emperor with no clothes. Is Iran as prepared for conflict and conquest as Iranian leadership would have us believe? Or is Iranian leadership more expert at propaganda than it is at military and nuclear preparedness? The United States and Israel probably have Askari. Now they need to get into his head. This is an op-ed piece at Israel Insider Today, Israel's daily news magazine, by a guy named Micah D. Halperin. You can find that piece by going to Breaking All the Rules News and looking under Neocon Watch for this story, which has obvious implications in that it suggests once more that there is an entire set of stuff going on in the Middle East as it relates to Iran and Israel that involves the policy of extraordinary rendition. Read that as a euphemism for kidnapping. That involves a behind-the-scenes warfare that is getting the United States more deeply embroiled in the Middle East. As I was discussing with Michael Collins Piper yesterday, and as we've been talking about on this show for quite a number of days and weeks now, what is happening in the Azerbaijani situation, particularly on the Iranian side of that border, in Iranian West Azerbaijan? What is happening in Khuzestan province of Iran, the location of Iran's oil-producing capacity and capability? What is happening in Balochistan province in Iran, where there seem to be a series of activities going on that suggest cross-border incursions into Iran from countries that border Iranian Balochistan? Certainly those things in conjunction now with the disappearance of Ali Askari, Ali Reza Askari, in Istanbul on February the 7th, suggests that there is a secret war that is going on, a secret war that is not under the control of the Congress of the United States, a secret war that threatens to embroil the United States in a deeper situation from which we will not be able to extricate ourselves in the days ahead. Folks, this is quite clearly a truism in regard to what both the paleoconservative and libertarian versions of the American right wing have been saying for a long time. And that is that when you have an empire that is doing certain things abroad in the foreign arena, that is an empire that will progressively take away the liberties of the American people domestically. This is what's happening, it seems to me, in regard to our Middle Eastern policy, where if you look at this whole business of extraordinary renditions and kidnappings, the whole business of even being involved on a clandestine basis in the art of political assassination, that those kinds of things, which are repugnant to a real republic, are the very kinds of things that suggest that a government doing those kinds of things abroad is a government that is going to be increasingly operating against its own citizens. And what do we have in recent years? Well, we have, the USA Patriot Acts. We have the Military Commissions Act of 2006. We have the revelations about the National Security Agency spying and so forth and so on. And, of course, yesterday's conviction of Scooter Libby, Mr. Cheney's former chief of staff, for being involved in the CIA leak case, is suggestive of yet other things going on in the executive branch of our government that have not yet been fully uncovered. Does anyone really believe that all of this ends with Scooter Libby, that he operated alone, that he did not have ongoing conversations with his own superiors in regard to this whole situation with Ambassador Joseph Wilson and Valerie Plame? I don't think there are too many folks who at least privately would tell you that they believe that. This Scooter Libby case is undoubtedly the tip of the iceberg, both in terms of the CIA leak case specifically, as well as a series of other things going on generally that suggest that high crimes and misdemeanors, according to the Constitution, have been committed in a series of situations in the last 5 years, and that the United States Congress needs to get off of its collective duff and examine these things on a closer basis. This then gets into the whole question of news media. Why is it that we find ourselves having to turn so often to either non-conventional, non-corporate news media for real information, or to certain sources internationally that are not under the control of American media consortiums? I want to point out something that I found yesterday in Google News search. It is now posted at Breaking All the Rules News. It's starting to get some publicity among those who have been watching Zionist control of the American and British and Canadian news media for some time. This piece is particularly significant as it comes to the New Republic. If you're not familiar with the New Republic, it is a left-of-center publication that you can find on virtually any major newsstand in America. The New Republic has always had pretty much a pro-Zionist point of view. Looking at Dr. Robert Sungenis' piece, Neocons and the Jewish Connection, Part 3, which has been reprinted in the Lutheran Christian News of February 26th, it's made very clear there that the New Republic, which was owned by Martin Peretz, is in fact quite clearly a pro-Zionist neoconservative publication. But interestingly enough, the New Republic has now been acquired, and it's been acquired by the pro-Zionist Can West Communications Company in Canada, which is owned by the Asper family, A-S-P-E-R. If you're not familiar with the Asper family, they are a pro-Zionist family in Canada with direct connections to the Likud government in Israel and have been involved in a series of things involving publications that Can West Communications owns to ensure that none of their journalists writing for any of the publications owned by Can West are involved in any criticisms of the Israeli government generally or Israeli policies specifically. And quoting from a publication called Media Matters, they've got a piece entitled The New Republic's Odd New Owner. We have reposted that at Breaking All the Rules News under Neocon Watch. That will lead you directly into the Media Matters URL that has published this story. But it reads as follows. Unfortunately, when it comes to reporting on the Middle East, CanWest communications outlets seem averse to open public debate, with the Asper family often demanding editorial purity on the topic. CanWest is unabashedly pro-Israel, company executive Murdoch Davis once famously announced. Indeed, following a deadly anti-Israeli terrorist attack in Jerusalem in 2001, a CanWest chain-wide editorial announced, quote, "Howsoever the Israeli government chooses to respond to this barbaric atrocity should have the unequivocal support of the Canadian government," unquote. CanWest deplored, quote, "the usual hand-wringing criticism about excessive force," and declared, quote, "nothing is excessive," unquote. Papers were subsequently instructed not to publish columns or letters to the editor taking issue with that editorial. During an October 2002 speech, Izzy Asper eviscerated media coverage of the Middle East, complaining that lazy, sloppy, stupid, and anti-Semitic reporters suffer from a pro-Palestinian bias. Quote, "They have adopted Palestinian propaganda as the context of their stories. They have become partisans in, and not providers of, knowledge about this war against Israel," said Asper. That is something that you can find today in Media Matters. And Breaking All the Rules News has reposted this story at Neocon Watch. And you know, when you go through and read the original post at Media Matters, which I have simply taken one excerpt from, you begin to see how much media censorship there is in Canada through CanWest Communications and through the Zionist agenda of the Asper family. Lo and behold, here we discover that CanWest has purchased the 93-year-old New Republic. And when you look at the New Republic, it becomes increasingly clear that they are a microcosm of a much larger problem, both in Canada and in the United States, when it comes to Jewish and Zionist control of the North American electronic and print media. By the way, CanWest Communications is a multi-billion dollar media behemoth, quoting again from the Media Matters story, that's brimming with more than 100 Canadian newspapers and dozens of television and radio properties worldwide. If you get into their original post on this, you can then click on a link which will take you to all of those newspapers and television and radio properties worldwide to see who and what they are. However, as you go on to read the Media Matters post entitled "The New Republic's Odd New Owner," you discover that CanWest's recent history is littered with lawsuits, gag orders, and byline strikes, buffered by a steady stream of columnists, reporters, and editors who complain CanWest actively censors its employees who stray from the company's conservative, pro-war, pro-Israel blueprint. On paper, that's not a problem for the New Republic, since it was proudly pro-war and pro-Israel under its previous ownership. But New Republic editor Franklin Foer told the New York Times that the CanWest deal cements the magazine's center-left philosophy. And more importantly, the New Republic remains, in theory, a publication dedicated to open debate and would likely recoil at any kind of top-down editorial litmus test. If that's precisely what Canadian journalists have been complaining about for years with CanWest. And as we go down, we see a series of situations that are then reported in the Toronto Star. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer mentions difficulties with CanWest in Vancouver. CanWest's Winnipeg headquarters is involved in a number of activities that have embroiled journalists at the Montreal Gazette. Employees at CanWest's the Regina Leader Post in Ottawa, who have been upset in past years over CanWest's position in framing things in terms of Israel and Zionism. Stephen Kimber quit his job as a columnist for the Halifax Daily News in 2002 after being censored by his CanWest editors. Let me quote something from this article that Mr. Kimber has reportedly said. Quote, "It was very direct. CanWest said, 'You can't say anything that would not be supportive of the government of Israel, that might be supportive of the Palestinians. You can't say anything that would reflect badly on CanWest, and you can't talk about Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. The Aspers were close political allies of the then Canadian Prime Minister. Montreal Gazette columnist Lyle Stewart quit the newspaper in 2002 after three of his weekly columns were spiked for the same reasons, as Media Matters tells us in this story. In June of 2002, Russell Mills, the longtime publisher of the Ottawa Citizen, was fired after his paper ran an editorial calling for the resignation of the then Canadian Prime Minister for his role in a conflict of interest scandal. And as we go on, in October of 2003, a Quebec arbitrator ended up ruling against CanWest by finding that Montreal Gazette journalists had the right to withhold their bylines as they see fit. And again, as we go on and read what Media Matters says about the New Republic's new owner, it begs the question, why is CanWest Communications and the Asper family so interested in owning the New Republic? It's always been pro-war and pro-Israel up to now, but it seems that potentially the acquisition of the New Republic is a move toward a wider expansion and accentuation of Zionist control of the American news media. Mark Dankoff's America will be back, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And stay tuned for Mark Farrell of Cincinnati, Ohio, shortly after 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. We'll be back.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Hi, Michelle. I haven't seen you on the bus for a while. Did they change your shift?
No, Lori. I finally quit my job. I'm working at home now, and I love it. No more commuting. And I'm home when the kids get out of school.
Working at home? Doing what?
It's a long story. It all started when I discovered the website earnmoneyathome123.com.
Oh, Michelle, you didn't fall for one of those internet deals, did you?
Well, I looked into several, and this one is for real.
Are you sure?
I didn't quit my job until I was sure, and now I'm making way more money working at home.
Really?
I've joined the success team in their major advertising co-op. Our business is fully automated, which gives me more money and the time to enjoy it. I'll be earning money while we're skiing this winter.
What was that website again?
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Here, write it down.
Good idea. EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Maybe we can go skiing this winter, too.
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com is a global opportunity.
We're back. This is Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. In the first hour of the show, we've been looking at some interesting news items. I had been making reference to Dr. Louis Fisher's statements before the Senate Committee on the Judiciary, January the 30th, 2007. You can find these through the Congressional Research Service and also through LouRockwell.com's post of February 12th. In there, Dr. Fisher speaks about the fact that it is Congress constitutionally that has the prerogative to declare war and to make war on foreign nations, not the President of the United States. We discussed that story a little bit in the first part of this hour, especially as it relates to what is clearly an ongoing expansion of American involvement in the Middle East as we seem to be in a final run-up to the days of preemptive war with Iran. In that regard, the disappearance of Ali Reza Askari, the former Iranian deputy defense minister, former intelligence officer, former member of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps as a senior officer, his disappearance in Istanbul on the 7th of February, a disappearance that has yet to be explained, is largely believed to have been the work of both the Israeli Mossad and the American Central Intelligence Agency. Take a look again at a piece that we were talking about earlier in this first hour of the show. Micah Halpern has an op-ed piece for Israel Insider on Ali Reza Askari and where he went, where Mr. Halpern believes that he went. And that story can be accessed directly at Israel Insider. But we have posted it at Breaking All the Rules News under Neocon Watch, so that if you want to find the story, BATR is always an easier URL to find. And then go from there directly into the Israel Insider piece, where quite clearly there are a lot of fingers that point at both Tel Aviv and Washington as having been involved in this Ali Reza Askari disappearance in Istanbul on the 7th of February. It says a great deal, not simply about the character of our foreign policy, that these kinds of extraordinary renditions seem to be a greater staple in the American and Israeli diet on an ongoing basis, but also what it portends for the news media in this country and in Canada, where the Ali Reza Askari disappearance in Istanbul has largely been unreported. And when we consider why it's been unreported, we then get into, of course, the piece that I was looking at with you before the last commercial break at a site entitled MediaMatters.org, and Eric Bollert's piece there, The New Republic's Odd New Owner, makes it clear that the New Republic, which you can buy on virtually any newsstand in America, which has always been pretty pro-Israel, pretty pro-war, pretty pro-neocon, has suddenly been acquired by the Canwest Global Communications Company, the great North media giant that has the Asper family in the control of Canwest Communications. And that, without a doubt, if you do an internet search on Canwest Global Communications and the Asper family, you will discover that they are among the supreme media assets in the Western world that the Israeli governmental and intelligence apparatus possesses. And looking at the acquisition then of the New Republic on the part of Canwest Global Communications and the Asper family begs the question, why the sudden entrance into the American media in this way on the part of the Asper family? What are they trying to do with the New Republic? It's always been pro-Israel and largely pro-Middle Eastern war. Why is this suddenly a significant thing that they own this publication? Quite clearly, it would seem to be a further step in the direction of a brand of Zionist control of the Western news media that encompasses not simply Canada but the United States. And that may be one of the things that we'll get into with Mark Farrell of Cincinnati after the next commercial break. This is Mark Danpas, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.